From the studios of KPCW in Park City, this is The Mountain Life, healthy living in the Wasatch, health, nutrition, fitness, and lifestyle. I'm Lynn Ware Peak.
Rachel Friedman is our next guest. She's written a new book called And Then We Grew Up on creativity, potential, and the imperfect art of adulthood. Friedman was a serious violist as a kid. She quit music in college, but never stopped fantasizing about what her life might be like if she hadn't put down her bow. Years later, a freelance writer in New York, she again finds herself struggling with her fantasy of an artist's life versus its much more complicated reality. So she tracks down her childhood friends from the prestigious Interlaken Arts Camp to find out how their early creative ambitions as musicians, as actors and dancers and visual artists have translated into adult careers, relationships, and identities. The story is what it would seem, and it's also not what it would seem. It's a story of many layers, and I'm happy to be able to speak with Rachel Friedman this morning. Good morning, Rachel. Thanks for joining The Mountain Life.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
And Then We Grew Up, the title of your new book. As I was reading it, I felt like, I know that you said this was a story for you, about you, but really it's a story about everyone wondering, looking back on their lives and wondering if only they had stayed on this path. I felt like, and maybe you could comment on this, while you were talking about creative arts, and namely you're playing the viola, and then even, you know, you being a writer entering into it, I feel like this is for anyone who felt like they were good at something when they were young, and then they abandon it for one reason or another.
Absolutely. I think we all face this gap between what we thought as kids our lives would look like and their much more complicated grown-up reality.
Right. So it all surrounds this camp that you went to in the summer for sort of gifted young artists. And you loved the viola. You knew from a very young age that this was going to be your calling. Summers at band camp, I'll call it, even though it wasn't a band camp, really, it cemented that for you. Can you talk about why and how?
Yeah, Interlaken is a very magical place, was, still is, I think, for the kids who go there. And it's the closest I can get to describing its magic is that it's a place where I think a lot of kids who felt like misfits back home could finally be themselves. You know, these were like the sensitive, daydreamy, artistic kids who love music and acting and dance instead of sports or other more traditional kid activities, I guess, not traditional, but, you know, things that maybe led them to feel a little bit like they didn't fit in back home. And Interlaken was a place that celebrated that artistic inclination and experimentation, and where, you know, a whole bunch of kids who all knew the lyrics to Godspell could be really excitedly singing it together. So I think for a lot of us, when we went off to camp, we had these artistic hobbies that then either we realized, oh, we really want to do this for a living, we want to be professional artists in some way, or it very quickly made other people realize this wasn't their calling. It was really boot camp for creative kids.
Right. And you survived with flying colors boot camp kind of until you went off to college and were a music student. And that was the point, and it reminded me of that saying that is said many different ways, but, you know, perfection is the enemy of whatever, of progress, of success, of completion.
Right.
And that's sort of what it was like for you. You had always had perfection, and then when you didn't, when you were in college and there were those who were better than you, it sort of destroyed you, didn't it?
It did. Yeah, I had that moment that so many of us have when, you know, we were a big fish, small pond, and then the situation is reversed. And I realized that if I wanted to be a musician, first of all, I wasn't sure I was good enough. And if I was going to get good enough, it was going to take everything else away from my life, because the amount of time I would need to practice and focus in on that would have just been completely, you know, isolating, I think, at a certain point. And I was really miserable playing music, which had been something that I had loved for my entire childhood. So it was quite an unnerving time for me. And I think a lot of us have that moment when we hit that ceiling and think, oh God, what now? The thing I thought I wanted is no longer what I want. What do I do now?
Right. Oh, I think so many of us, all of us, have been at that point in our life to one degree or another. And it makes me wonder about that question. You mentioned big fish, small pond. You're a mom. And with your son, do you, looking back on it, would you recommend to other parents, you know, small fish in a big pond or big fish, small pond? I know that the parents talk about this and think about it a lot.
Yeah, I do think about that with my own child and how to navigate that. You know, people have asked me, would you send your kids to Interlochen? And yeah, absolutely. If he was interested in going, I would love for him to have that experience. I think that as a parent now, I'm really focused on figuring out the balance between helping him pursue his passions, wanting him to work hard, and also helping him cultivate equally important skills, you know, like being flexible and adaptable when it comes to his dreams, knowing when to quit something, when it's no longer serving him, and how to quit gracefully, which for me, I think means quitting without having your identity and ego so wrapped up in something that you feel like a failure when you leave it behind.
And when you left the viola behind, you went on this sojourn, shall we call it, as you, mm-hmm. you say, traveling and waitressing around the world, and you became a writer. You love to write your travel stories. And here you are, from my perspective, a very successful writer, because I have your book. I'm holding it right in my hands, and it's published by a great publishing house, Penguin Random House, to be exact. And yet, I know there are still those inklings in your mind of, well, maybe it's not good enough. And again, it goes back to that perfection. Or have you learned the self-talk enough to say, no, this is good. This is good. I've really reached something that I feel success is wrapped up in it.
I think that through writing this book, I am more and more at peace overall with the ebbs and flows of being an artist and of life, hopefully. But it's always an evolution and a conversation I'm having with myself. And of course, I feel incredibly lucky to be someone who's become a writer and had two books. But, you know, it's all about framing. You know, there's this one version of my story that looks like a successful narrative, and there's another version you could tell where you could say, I had a book published 8 years ago. I had another book I was working on in between the first book and this book that failed to launch. And so, you know, that was a setback, right? There's all these moments where we move forward, we slide back, if you want to think of it that way. And even that is overly simplified. But I think I'm now better at weathering those ups and downs than I used to be.
Well, that's good. Congratulations on that.
Thank you.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Rachel Friedman. Her new book is And Then We Grew Up. It's on creativity, potential, and the imperfect art of adulthood. You have these really great takeaways from the book. And one of them is on this notion of never quitting, you say, but maybe quit. And so what's the right way to quit now that you've learned how and you're writing about quitting?
Quitting is so tricky in this current cultural moment we're in, where we're encouraged to never give up. You know, like the only failure is quitting, the phrase people use. And I think that we have conflated failure and quitting in a way that doesn't really help us, because there are plenty of moments when we are better served by letting something go than by holding on to it, you know, personally and professionally. And I think what I've learned about quitting is that, again, you have to disentangle kind of your identity and your ego from it in order to be able to check in with yourself and ask if what you're doing is still making you happy, and if you're suited to it, and all sorts of other questions. I some research in the book where I show that people who know when to quit something are essentially healthier people. They have lower stress hormones, lower levels of inflammation. When they're able to quit something and then put their energies into something else, that's actually a very productive and affirming thing to do. But we focus in so hard, I think, right now on this idea of perseverance that message of letting go gets lost along the way a little bit.
Yes. You do such a great job of describing the stress and anxiety that you experienced in college when you realized that your music career was getting the best of you. You know, it was a visceral feeling that your writing sort of produced in me because it made me think of those times. It's dawned on me that this is not working out. Mm-hmm. I can't even imagine if you had stayed with it, how negative it would have been for you. And so that is the art of knowing when to quit is, you know, that's a really good lesson for all of us. So thanks for that.
Yeah, I think that I fantasize about my musician's life in a way, or I used to, especially before writing this book, that did not at all take into account the fact that I was miserable in college doing the thing that I supposedly loved. And there's no guarantee that had I kept at it, that I would have been fulfilled in the way that I imagined when I was a kid that my music life would look like.
Yeah. I was wondering if you included in your tagline, you know, the words creativity and living an artistic life, because there's something that runs deeper with creativity and being an artist than to, you know, pursuits that aren't necessarily creative or artistic. Mm-hmm. Is there really a separation? Because I just felt like the themes here were about, there were so much about life and about anything we do.
Yeah, I didn't want people to feel like the book was only for artists, because I think that we are, as humans in our bones, creative people, and we're all, so many of us, I shouldn't say we're all, but so many of me and my friends are always thinking about ways to tap into that creativity, to infuse some creativity in our lives, whether or not we've gone into artistic fields or not. So that was the reason behind using that word.
So in your book, then, you go back, you find all of these people that you went to Interlaken camp with over the years, and you go back and find out what their path has been, and it's sort of spurred by an actor that had been at camp with you, and you just erroneously see him in a movie one day when you're sort of down about your own lot in life. But you go back, and there's some great stories about what people have done, the paths that they took. And I know we all would love to go back and find out how those people have evolved or not, or what their paths are. So can you just tell us a story, maybe even the first one? You're one of your really good friends who becomes a music teacher.
Yeah, one of the people profiled in the book, she's in the first chapter, and Jenna was an incredibly talented violinist, someone who I had pictured going on to be, if not a soloist, then for sure in a symphony or performing in some way. And she decided quite early on in college that she knew she wanted a family and she wanted to be close to home. And she was able to very wisely and strategically kind of balance those desires for her future with her love of playing. And even though she was pushed, she was so talented that she was pushed by her teachers to be a performance major, to go down that path, she intuitively knew that it wasn't right for her and veered off of it and became a very successful high school orchestra teacher at one of the most diverse public schools in Chicago. She now has these incredible string ensembles where they do original music and covers and, you know, of songs, and it's incredible. But it was really interesting meeting up with her, because I had these kind of expectations for her in ways I had projected, you know, my own feelings about her level of talent and kind of what she should do with it. And she she was actually, of course, extremely happy with the balance in her life. She talked about, you know, having moments where she thought about performing still and maybe having pursued that path, but that she was very clear. She said, you know, I've always been idealistic but realistic, and I knew that I wanted this particular balance in my life between my family life and my professional life, and that's what I've cultivated all of these years, and I'm fulfilled by that.
Yes, by many measures, she achieved more success, fulfillment, contentment, and maybe even a greater contribution to society than if she had fulfilled your idea for her.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about Michelle, who got the musical career that you thought you wanted, and you say that the takeaway here is realizing that there's no alternate perfect life that we could have had, which is a really great place to arrive at.
I really highly recommend we all track down our childhood friends who, you know, we think that they got the lives we wanted, because, of course, it's never that simple. No one else is living this version of your life that you thought you should be living. And I think through my conversations with Michelle and through all of my conversations, I really, in a deep soul level way, grew to understand that not only is no one living their exactly perfect life as they had intended, but also we have no idea of knowing, even if we got what we wanted, as I mentioned before, if we would have been happier or more satisfied. You know, it's not like our lives are this choose your own adventure where we can pick one thing a la carte. We tell ourselves these stories like, oh, if only I had more talent, if only I had been luckier, if only I had worked harder, I would have gotten X. But we have no way of knowing if that's true. And also, say we had gone down that other path, can you really say that you would be willing to kind of give up everything you have now in order to get that other thing? Because we have no idea how that choice for going down that particular path would have rippled across every other part of our lives. So that was really a comforting and edifying moment, finally meeting up with her and kind of facing all of that head on.
Yeah. Well, Rachel, it's such a great book. There's so many takeaways, and I can only imagine how cathartic it was to you writing it, because it was very cathartic even to me reading it. So nice job.
Thank you so much. And that makes me so happy to hear that it was cathartic reading it.
Yeah. Rachel Friedman is my guest, and her book is And Then We Grew Up. It's on creativity, potential, and the imperfect art of adulthood. Rachel, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for tuning in to The Mountain Life. If you missed part of the show or want to share it, all our shows are posted within the hour on kpcw.org under the Shows tab. We also podcast all of KPCW's Public Affair Hour shows. Wherever you find your podcast, you can find them under KPCW and the individual show name. So look for KPCW The Mountain Life and take us with you on your next road trip or commute.